Today, we have a truly special episode lined up for you. Joining us is a remarkable guest, Jessica Leseski. Jessica is the Vice President and General Manager of Shutterfly and Snapfish, which are leading retailers and manufacturers of high-quality personalized products and services. A visionary in the retail industry, Jessica's journey is nothing short of inspiring, from her early days growing up as a farmer's daughter to becoming a powerhouse in the world of digital marketplaces. She's been at the forefront of transforming how we shop and sell in the modern age. We'll explore Jessica's unique insights into building brands, her experiences with giants like Amazon and Etsy, and her forward-thinking approaches to merchandising and e-commerce strategies. We'll also learn how Jessica navigates the complexities of online marketplaces and her strategies for staying ahead in the rapidly changing industry. Jessica will also share her views on the future of retail, the importance of customer experience, and the role of technology in shaping consumer behavior. This episode is packed with actionable insights, personal stories, and expert advice. It's a rare opportunity to hear directly from the leader who has not only witnessed it, but also influenced a significant change in the retail and e-commerce sectors. Let's dive in. Welcome to the Ecom Pulse, your heartbeat to the world of e-commerce. I'm your host, Eitan Kotter. Join us as we meet with industry leaders, marketing experts, and the innovative minds behind the tech that is shaping the e-commerce future. So plug in, gear up, and get ready for a pulse-pounding journey into the heart of e-commerce. Jessica, I'm super excited having you here. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I feel honored. It's exciting. You have so many great guests and lots of key talent in the industry. So it's a pleasure to be here.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. I mean, you've been in the industry for so many years. I mean, you've built brands, you've built marketplaces, heading merchandising, have experience with branded store, Amazon, Etsy. You've done so many things. Why don't you give us like a quick update, right? And you can start from whatever you want about your background and your experience in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I have to start actually from the very beginning because I grew up a farmer's daughter and I also grew up in the retail environment. So when I wasn't on the farm with my dad, which is like turkeys, hogs, cows, I was in the retail store because my grandfather owned like the original dollar stores, five and dime stores, where he was.
Wow.
Yeah. And he also had a side business where he would go in to retailers and help them liquidate. So manage their going out of business sales or help them with turnarounds. So I'd follow him and go to Georgia, you know, in the States, or I'd go to, you know, a store that he was working on locally. And I got to watch kind of that environment. And then my aunt owned retail stores. So every Black Friday, I'd go and work with her over the weekend, which was just amazing. I think that's probably where I fell in love with retail. So my family likes to joke that I'm the next generation of retail in this e-commerce marketplace world. So out of college, I started working for Channel Advisor, which is now Rithium after the acquisition by Commerce Hub. And that's really where I got a sense of not only just commerce, but this whole notion and you know, landscape within marketplaces. Our software helped retailers and small businesses and sellers manage their businesses on eBay. We eventually expanded to Amazon. And then from there, I just worked in a variety of different capacities. I had a stint at Barnes & Noble, helping them stand up a marketplace, went to eBay to help them scale in working with large retailers and merchants. So that was in the John Donahoe era where we were working with brands like Under Armour and Calvin Klein and Kate Spade and Coach and helping them find new ways to generate revenue off of their either factory outlet product or just their excess inventory. And then went into the B2B space for a bit, worked for some small retailers, helped a local jewelry company expand into China and Italy and the UK. So that was interesting, taking a brand international. And then, you know, kind of found my way to a company called Spoonflower in Raleigh or Durham, North Carolina, where I was chief revenue officer, helped them scale through the pandemic. We were acquired by Shutterfly and the rest is history. And that's how I ended up here.
Yes. Wow, amazing, amazing. Thank you for making this short, because I know it's, I always ask about background of guests, but no one ever started from, you know, being a kid. So you're in retail from so being so young. So, and also say that you are passionate about it from the beginning. So it's really nice. I mean, kudos to the parents, right? To the father.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So. I'm sure they had high hopes of me being a doctor, a lawyer, or a veterinarian or something. But when I was trying to explain to them what I did at Channel Advisor, and it was such early days of commerce. It's like, wait, you do what now? Now it's just kind of they're major shoppers online, so it's pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, we are in a business. It's very difficult for our parents to understand what we do, right? I don't know if it's maybe, you know, the industry or our age. So, but anyhow.
Exactly. I think they also like feel like I'm tech support. So, can you help me?
Yeah.
You know, you're in commerce. Can you help me do this? Like, I don't know the ins and outs of a MacBook, but I can definitely tell you how to navigate the Amazon marketplace landscape. So,
yeah. So how are things today in Shutterfly? I mean, you lead the VP of merchandising. Tell us a little bit about this role.
Yeah, it is such a fun company. It's such a fun experience, because if you think about what we do, the heart of what we do is we help people preserve their memories and take that something that is trapped on your phone, where people have thousands. I mean, the average consumer has over 3,000 photos on their phone.
Wow. You know,
I'm upwards of 10,000. And so what we help people do is really harness that and make something special out of it. And so it's really inspiring to see what customers do with their photos and how they think about commemorating those memories. And really, we want to help people take the stress out of being thoughtful. So it's not just about taking these digital artifacts and creating them into something physical, but how can we help add value to your daily life in order to do that? And one example is we have this product called it's Make My Book. It's a free 24-hour designer service where you can give us, you know, up to 800 photos or 1,000 photos, and we will utilize artificial intelligence coupled with a designer who will actually create the photo book for you. So it's really transforming and introducing a whole new generation of people into photo books that probably would feel intimidated initially about, you know, the heavy lift of creating something like that. And it's one of our fastest growing products and services.
Really? Well, what is the demographics for this type of a solution?
Yeah, it does skew younger. It also skews to occasion. So if you think about, it's not, it could be really a variety of different demographics. It's more about the use case. So when people travel, they take these big trips, they'll take a lot of photos. You want to really, commemorate every moment of being in this new place, new country, new scene, beautiful beaches. And that's a lot of photos to do something with. And again, people feel a little scared of like, how am I now going to put this into a photo book? It's a lot. I just won't do it. So it can excuse to those bigger books. Weddings is another big event. So you have a lot of photos from your wedding. You have the photos you get from your photographer. You have all the photos that your friends and family might take and you put on, you get sent to you. And so that's another common use case. And then those big year-end reviews. So it's becoming, you know, more and more of a trend of, again, you people have all these photos on their phone and they want to think about how do they commemorate the year. And so, you know, hand us your photos for a full year and we'll create it into this beautiful chronological event that, it's another coffee table centerpiece and it becomes something you sit and look at with your kids or you look at with your friends and family.
Seems like the entire world is looking to outsource so many things, right? I mean, brands are outsourcing, you know, CMOs and manufacturing so many things, and also ourselves. I mean, take our iPhone and just give us the books back, right?
That's right. We're in the world of services, right? It's like you've got Instacart, you have DoorDash, you've got people that will come and set up your tech for you. I mean, Best Buy, I think because of this aging generation, a service that Best Buy has that's growing well is, hey, we're kind of your outsourced tech support. So when your mom calls you about your laptop, just phone a friend at Best Buy and we're going to help you out. So I do think we're in this world of services and convenience. And if the price is right or the value proposition is there, people are willing to pay.
Yes. I can tell you also from the tech side of things. I mean, we always try to innovate and be special and differentiate and all these, you know, nice words and unique selling points and, you know, values. And at the end of the day, customer wants white glove service, kind of a managed service. Obviously, there is a technology layer.
Yeah.
But again, there are so many technology companies. Like, you know, when I started, you know, we would develop a product. It was last for 10 years at least.
Right.
Now it's like months, right?
Yes.
It used to be 18 months. Maybe it's 12. Maybe it's 6 months today. Because, I mean, definitely with AI, I mean, so fast for everyone. I mean, barriers to entry are so low. So probably it's more difficult to differentiate on the tech side. And in the macroeconomic status of today's in the US, right? So, hey, white glove, more managed service, take our budget and just do whatever and give us the analytics, improved, you know, throughout the process, and let's work together as a team to make something happen. So I think there's a big, big change definitely in the industry, and services are very, very important together with specific, you know, technology innovation. Yep.
Well, if you look at even in where the economy is today, and there's certainly pressures in consumer spending, there's inflation. If you look at the industries and the sectors that are growing, people are still traveling. People are still spending on concerts. You know, they'll save up their money to go to a Taylor Swift concert more so than, and then they'll buy, you know, the cheap $10 dress on Shein or Temu instead of, you know, the designer outfit.
Temu.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to drop a Temu in here.
Yeah, we cannot run away from Temu. From
exactly. So, but they absolutely spend on those more like discretionary services experiences. And I think that's what's interesting about the landscape today. And there was a lot of pent-up demand from COVID too, right? People were kind of landlocked or house locked for a while. And so we haven't run that course fully yet.
I think also people are fed up, you know, post-COVID, everything on Zoom calls. And I mean, looking for more human-to-human type of engagement, whether it's entertainment, business, or anything of that sort. Right?
They're craving those connections. And when you talk about trends and what's happening with consumers, there's also this affinity for old, right? You know, vinyl albums are trending, digital, not digital cameras, but your point-and-shoot cameras. DSLRs, those are trending as well, and there's a lot of growth. And so I think people, while technology has helped us, there is this love affair of going back to kind of some of the, just the more simpler moments. So we'll see if VHS has returned, but I don't know if that's going to... My kids are like, wait, what? You played a tape? What?
Yeah. Rewind and forward.
Yeah,
and
I mean, we had to wait for the DJ to, you know, if he cut into your song, you were so mad when you were trying to make that mixtape.
Yes.
They'll never know. They'll never know the pain of creating the perfect mixtape.
I saw that there is still a growth in those early days feature phones, right? First generation phones are still on the rise.
Yeah.
Another important thing, I think, in the fashion industry, all the sustainability, right? So secondhand, I mean, this is big. Right, and you look at some of the companies that are operating in the fields; they are growing, you know, like crazy. Right, without mentioning names, like hundreds of percent of growth, you know, every year. So I know you're also a great advocate for customer experience.
Yes,
and you have a lot of experience in customer experience and user experience. And what do you think is the best, you know, or from your experience, the correct process to identify, you know, what consumers really want, and what some of the best practices that you have developed and put in place in some of those scenarios?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is the importance of having your art with your science, right? There's so much data that's available today, and I think sometimes you can get over consumed with data to the point of the common sense or the logic might just go by the wayside, right? So, you know, an example is, oh, hey, this error pops up, but we're not really seeing any impact to our conversion. Really? I mean, I'm sure the data says that, but like common sense and logic will tell you no, there's friction in that journey. Let's fix it. Let's like keep improving and enhancing. Mm-hmm. I think there's also there's that quantitative with the qualitative piece that's really important. Looking at different customer journey mapping and what are the use cases in particular? So not trying to solve for every use case, but what are mm-hmm. the key jobs to be done? And what is the customer journey through those jobs to be done? And that experience, and how do you keep improving and keep raising the bar? I think sometimes there's, good's good enough and we'll move on. But if you can kind of keep pushing and keep taking friction out and, improve that by, 1% in conversion, and that's like your highest revenue, your highest funnel, it's going to be mm-hmm. so much more gains than like focusing on some of the small things or the shiny objects. I think a lot of times retailers have the tendency to get distracted and forget about the commerce fundamentals and just kind of keep honing in on those, keep improving those because they're chasing, we need to implement this new Bitcoin at checkout, or we need to go after NFTs or whatever the next, we want to add this AI bot to help our customers shop. But yet not like really land on is your conversion just in your core shopping experience the best as it can be? Because if you're not on a Shopify or you're not Amazon, those are really the experiences that customers are getting used to and they don't even have to think about it. So I feel like you just have to keep raising the bar and improving your core journeys before you start to chase those shiny objects or those kind of new things that might be the hottest tech.
Yeah. And that's, again, a common theme from all my interviews. I mean, the idea is that we need to get back to the basics, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, hey, this brand worked with this influencer. Let's do the same. It might work for us. Or let's overspend on this advertising because we don't know when to stop and take some data analysis and take some decision, maybe a bold decision or some smarter decision to change things and not adopt every hype that is out there. You mentioned NFTs and Bitcoin and Metaverse and so many new things that I think AI, I mean, bots are like all over, right? You don't know. Maybe I am a bot right now. No one knows.
Yeah. There'll be some kind of evolution of this where AI is on our faces.
But it looks like AI is going to stay, right?
It is.
I think a lot of companies use AI because it saves a lot of time and money for them, I guess.
Right. Yeah, there's absolutely practical uses for AI. Yes. And, Kathy Arnson, who was on a show that Rick Watson and I do together, the Watson Weekend, she, I think, had the most beneficial and practical response, which is she loves AI, how she uses it in her industry. But it's for kind of those table stakes and making it easier. So when you're trying to write SEO content, what used to take someone a lot of thought and time, mm-hmm. you can truly accelerate and get better output by utilizing AI. And I know that that might not wow people in the boardroom. Those are really the practical use cases that are going to help accelerate and provide value add to a retailer to, in efficiency and help you scale your resources faster. I know that it's more enticing to kind of talk about, we've introduced this new magical AI bot that's transformed the way our customers
revolutionized, transform one of these.
Yes, transformative. but I think that really those practical use cases are what's going to help differentiate a retailer between extracting the most value from an operational efficiency perspective while we keep letting the tech evolve to mm-hmm. where it needs to be in order to do some of those more transformative customer facing things. But I mean, AI's been around for a while. We've had chatbots in customer service forever, and mm-hmm. that's been another form of AI. So I'm a big fan of it, and those like practical use cases where it just will help improve your efficiency while we let it train itself and get smarter before exposing it to customers, where it might just create more friction or frustration.
Yeah, again, I fully agree. I mean, we cannot put AI in the same metaverse / NFTs / Bitcoin, you know, categories. This has a major impact, right, on our lives, and it's just started, and it moves so fast. I mean, if you look at Sora now, right, from OpenAI, I mean, what they do with video, yeah, like text to video, I mean, it's unbelievable. But hey, you mentioned Rick Watson. Maybe it's a good opportunity for you to share more info about the weekly show and what you do with Rick.
Yeah, absolutely. So Rick and I have known each other 20 years now. We started early in our career at Channel Advisor together. We worked at Barnes & Noble together. We've done some consulting work together. So he is a very dear friend. And every week we do a show just talking about e-commerce trends, what's happening in the market. We'll analyze earnings of companies like Shopify, Walmart, Target. We talk about the dynamics of Temu, Shein, and what that's doing to the industry, which is also fun to watch. And then I do a segment called the Consumer Happiness Index, which is really just meant to help retailers get a pulse on what's the consumer sentiment, what's the CPI data saying, what's the retail data saying, what are people buying, and how does that help from a forward-looking perspective of where we see the economy going. There's lots of different resources out there and lots of different insights of what will the consumer keep spending or won't they? So the spirit of what we're trying to do is help break it all down and analyze it and make it digestible. So every week we have this show. It's a lot of fun, and it's just like talking to your friend about topics that we're very passionate about and like to dive into.
Wow, really, everything that you do there, you and Rick, and so thank you so much. It's really an inspiration, right, for all of us. So well done.
Well, thank you. I'm glad people like it. I think you start something and you hope that people will respond well to it. And I think the benefit is that Rick has built this amazing community in the e-commerce industry. Mm-hmm. He's so knowledgeable, and people just inherently trust him and they want more. So I'm a little bit, I'm kind of like the Robin to his Batman. So in this show, but it is a lot of fun. We love it. And I hope that we just keep putting out content that people like and they find valuable and resourceful. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes, sure. And you mentioned like 20 years of experience, right? So I'm not in the business for 20 years, right? I would love for your knowledge and insight, what has changed during those years? I mean, a lot of things have changed, technology for sure, but maybe in terms of consumer behaviors, maybe in terms of, you know, the way we market today, the way these businesses and the brands, for example, are operating today, what has changed from your perspective?
Well, I'll break it down into three areas. The consumer for sure has changed, and there's a lot of things that people thought the consumer would never do that they are doing, and they just needed that nudge. And so the first was, oh, people will never buy mattresses online. They'll never buy cars online. They'll never buy these those myths, I think, have been busted time and time again.
Large tickets, right? So it's
exactly. I mean, you think about actually one of the world's biggest flea markets is Facebook groups, right? Where you have these selling groups that are typically powered by, you know, women who are in local communities, and they're selling there. There's like this meme of a guy who's like, yeah, I'm sitting here in a parking lot, you know, may or may not die while my wife makes $5 on this toaster. But it's funny, right? Yeah. It's interesting. These things that we thought people would never do, they'd never get in a car with a stranger. Well, there's Uber, there's Lyft. So I think that the biggest lesson on the consumer side is you can never discredit what the consumer is willing to do. Again, if it goes back to there's value, there's some, it makes their lives simpler. There's joy that's created out of it. Or, you know, there's money in the event of, you know, earning money, selling my stuff. So that's the consumer side. I think on the brand side, the brands that have done well and persisted through all of the dynamics of the customer have been willing to change and move quickly. The brands that haven't, are really not with us anymore, right? And so I think that that's a lesson that retailers have to kind of keep in mind is, you know, it is a change or die scenario. You cannot be passive. You have to be active. You have to be willing to change. And people feel like change is a dirty word. It's not. Like, if you are not changing, you're not moving, you're not evolving, and you're not doing that from the lens of what is good for the customer, you'll fail every time.
Yeah.
And then I think the third dynamic is, like I said, just the whole like technology and how fast technology is changing. When I started, it cost so much money to build a website. There were a few people who knew how to do it. They made a lot of money. and you were sinking like millions and millions of dollars, maybe not millions, but millions in our day, like of dollars into building up these tech solutions that in the end of the day really couldn't scale. They're these monolith ecosystems that were pieced together in parts and took a lot of acuity, ingenuity to make it work and kind of build it all together. And now, you know, if I woke up tomorrow with a brand idea, I could build a website like that. I can, you know, get a little bit of money put out in social media and start to you get some traction. So I think it has also opened up this new world of a lower barrier to entry, more opportunity in entrepreneurship, but it's made it harder also for some brands who have like the legacy technology and tech debt to keep up.
Yes. Yes. So it's the barrier to entry are very low. Everyone can launch an e-com platform these days. So the competition is probably increasing, which encourages brands to move faster, right?
Right.
Don't be afraid to break things on the way because you will be gone very, very fast, right?
Yeah. I remember being in a meeting in Barnes & Noble when Rick and I were actually standing up this marketplace and sitting with some of the chief merchants on the store side and hearing things like, this will never work. The internet's a fad. People aren't going to go online and buy these things. Just a matter of time. And this is at a point where, again, Amazon was scaling, they were growing. And so it's just, it's interesting to kind of, like I said, never discount the consumer and what they're willing to do.
So you mentioned marketplaces. Obviously, one of the biggest trends for brands is finding more channels to sell.
Right.
Although they're sacrificing their margin, but they want to push, you know, manufacturing, push sales. And I know we also have a lot of experience in building and, you know, successful marketplaces and being involved in this type of environment. So, and we see more marketplaces are, you know, really getting bigger and bigger, obviously with retailers now and, you know, retail media, but let's just try to focus on marketplaces. What are some of the, you know, unique characteristics that you see and what's working these days in marketplaces? Of course, we have Amazon, right? And probably let's talk about all the rest.
I think, you know, you have Amazon. I think that it what I love is the evolution of marketplaces and how they show up in different types of capacities. So there's your traditional marketplace where, like it's Amazon, right? I have a category. I have a platform. I have traffic. I want to monetize more of that traffic. I'll bring on sellers. I'll have a percentage of sales that we'll charge. And good for the consumer, good for the seller. Great. I think there's also these marketplaces or ecosystems. Like in a way, Shopify is a marketplace, right? With their ecosystem of apps. You know, Apple has this ecosystem with apps. With the popularity of like Airbnb and VRBO, platforms have stood up to help people manage rental vacation properties, and they have apps that hook in. So I think it's just interesting how marketplaces have evolved and the definition of them in a variety of different ways. The ones that work the best, I think, again, know their customer really well, and it's a very thorough and thought out strategy that enables them to do a two-sided marketplace really well, where they're going to be able to add value not only to their customers, but to the sellers. And that's the part that people really forget. If you don't have sellers, you don't have whatever they're bringing, whether it's inventory, services, et cetera, you're not going to be successful. And the biggest mistake I've seen marketplaces make is their new entrants or retailers that are trying to become marketplaces is they forget about that part. And it's more just like, let's go and let's bring on a bunch of stuff and we'll see what works. And if there isn't this well thought out strategy and how you're going to create value for the sellers, they're not going to come. They're not going to bring whatever asset they have that you're trying to provide to your customers, or they're not going to stay. And so it just ends up fizzling out, fading out, and not being successful.
Yes. I mean, you go to Seller marketplaces because they should introduce traffic, right?
Right. Like
acquisition opportunities. Otherwise, this is like the fundamental.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the people that I've seen not do marketplace as well or companies, they forget about the fact that the seller does have to make money in order for them to stay. I mean, that's why, you know, Amazon has continued to be so successful because they're able to charge a premium. I mean, at this point, people are giving up 50 points of margin. Sellers are giving up 50 points of margin just to be there because you have the fees, you have the selling on the marketplace, you have FBA, then you have advertising on top of it.
Yes, which is like 30% of every dollar they make, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I think Rick had said before, your margin is their opportunity. And it's true.
Nice. I mean, it's getting really complex. I mean, there are so many communities, right? You have the Twitch community and the YouTube and the Instagram and now TikTok, and you have Amazon and Walmart. I mean, it's like, how can a marketeer, you know, take a decision? I think it's very, very complicated. This is first thing. Second thing, once you take the data, it's very difficult to analyze it. Okay, so great, I have sales on Amazon, but was it really triggered from all my activities on Amazon? Maybe they started on my website.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm a retailer, they've been to my offline store maybe, and then made the decision because they have the one-click checkout and they like Amazon, so they click, so they shop on Amazon. So I think all these, you know, omni-channel type of user experience and definitely data is very, very difficult to digest and to analyze.
It is. You have to do your best to extrapolate and see. Like when I was at Spoonflower, you know, we sold on Etsy, Amazon, Walmart, tested a lot of different things. And Etsy by far was the biggest channel and most important channel because it had the consumers that were more close to our customers. It also was a source of new customers. So we could see people would make maybe their first purchase on Etsy, and then they would come back to spoonflower.com directly. Mm-hmm. And so that was a channel that we chose to invest more in because we could better analyze and see that connection point. Yep. Going back to Amazon, it was just in our category a race to the bottom and not necessarily something that could be sustainable for a business where you're selling wallpaper, you're selling fabric. There's just so many different types of companies that you're competing against. And you can see on Amazon, people don't care about the brands as much. They used to, but the brands themselves are not what matters to the customer. It ultimately goes down to price. And, you know, there's some probably gamification happening with reviews. I know that Amazon tries very hard to clean that up, but the reality is a lot of these sellers are very good at getting reviews very quickly. And so for the consumer, as long as it's got good reviews, as long as it's the right price, they're going to buy it. They don't really care about the brand because the brand that they're buying from is Amazon and they think Amazon has their back.
Yes. Yes. They've built something very, very nice. And you know, it's also now there is a huge opportunity for online retailers or retail media. I mean, just look at the revenues that Amazon did on advertising, and it's just the beginning. Obviously, when we see that Walmart and Vizio are, you know, merging, and retail media is going not only on the retailers, let's say, digital asset, but also Amazon has Amazon Prime, and obviously Netflix and Disney, they are starting to bringing more and more of these advertising budgets into their pipelines.
Yeah, right, so it is. I think it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. Retailers need some other avenues of revenue to be sustainable or continue to find growth. When you look at Etsy, Walmart, Amazon, the businesses that are growing and growing in higher double digits are mm-hmm. their advertising businesses or their media businesses. Yeah. And it is providing, it's rich margin. So it's also, you know, boosting the overall P&L and profitability of the businesses. And so I think the challenge for retailers is not every retailer can build a media company or, you know, that's something that is going to work. And so you have to then look at, right, well, what asset do I have? What can I provide that's value add and will offer something interesting or unique to the customer, but also help either my distributors or my brands, et cetera, you know, get more exposure or get more sales. And so I think that companies are going to have to keep getting creative with the services that they can provide or offer. And how, what's the customer willingness to pay and, yep. and how will they be able to charge for them? But diversification of revenue, new sources of revenue, or, you know, partnerships, you see more brands collaborating or doing these partnerships. I think yep. like that's like Crocs has done that very well, where they either are partnering with an influencer or they're partnering with another brand. They're creating something that's really special. They do these drops and they sell out. And so they've honed in on that formula mm-hmm. and made it work for them. But again, it won't work for everyone. So you, to your point earlier, you can't just keep chasing the next idea. You've really got to dig and understand what's the unlock for your brand and how do you invest yes. in it.
And from the retailer's perspective, I mean, it makes so much sense to utilize your inventory for advertising, right? But right. I see, so beyond, you know, Amazon and Walmart, maybe Costco. Okay. So you have like a long tail of huge list of retailers. It seems to me that they are moving very, very slow, right? I mean, yeah. I guess the technology barrier for to become kind of a media network or advertising engine, I mean, it's probably not a straightforward implementation. And
yeah,
I think they're putting money on the table.
It's the technology yeah. piece. There's also some expertise, right? You have to, have talent that understands, you know, how to do this, how to unlock it. There's also just different like financials, accounting. And so I think that it's a matter of placing your bets and being willing to go all in and what's that return. And it's, you know, not an easy leap for everyone.
Yes. Jessica, so many companies grew without any substantial effort during COVID, right? And now they're scratching their head. Okay, it's getting tougher right now. And a lot of them are spending time in upgrading their platform or doing replatforming, right? And I know you also did that. And so what have you learned from this process and what you've done like differently?
Yeah, so when I've done replatforms in the past or built websites, I think it always takes longer than you think, and you need to account for that. I think you have to ensure you've got a small team that is trusted by the organization, that it's able to make decisions and move quickly. Because when you have decision by committee, it's taxing, and again, it adds to that lead time. You've got to be willing to not have it perfect out of the gate and take it in some stages. So I think a lot of companies maybe try to work like front to back, like, oh my gosh, my user experience is terrible. I need to fix my UX. Let's like mm-hmm. tackle that first. Mm-hmm. But if you get, you know, 2 to 3 points of improvement at checkout, like they've already made it to the funnel. Like, let's just help them get through that process. And yeah. so, you know, you can work backwards and actually get mm-hmm. this like even more gains because if you fix your front end, but people get to the checkout and you still have the cart abandonment issue, like mm-hmm. That's a problem, right? So fix your cart abandonment issue and work backwards. So that's a learning. And I think that there is no perfect system. It's going to be a perfect system for you. And so what are the things that you ultimately need to do and how do you make those decisions? And I think there's the last thing I will say is that whole build versus buy push pull between mm-hmm. the tech teams and the business side. You've really got to have tight alignment on what are your guardrails in terms of where you're willing to build and what do you want to build, because that can be unique, proprietary to you. And what are just go back to those core commerce fundamentals that other people are doing really well. Other commerce companies are doing really well. Why build those? And so I think it's being willing to make that call and invest in the things, use your tech talent to invest in the things that could be truly differentiated, more so than checkout.
Yes, yes. Again, the same theme throughout the interview. I mean, going back to the basics, it's the idea of also I hear it from other brands. I mean, cutting down SKUs, cutting down non-profitable markets, trying to make the strong stronger.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think the playbook of for a while, right, was the more product you had, the more inventory you had, you're going to get, you have the benefit of long tail SEO. You have the benefit of getting customers in and there's lots of choice. But what we know and are seeing more of is people are getting paralyzed by choice. They want to make a decision and they want to make it quickly. And so I think the tighter your inventory looks, and probably unless you're Amazon, but the tighter your inventory looks, the better it is. And you know, if you're focusing on your high powered SKUs, those workhorses for you, and then you're utilizing, going back to those basics, what is that like complimentary item or complimentary service that will help increase the basket size through cross sell or upsell? Mm-hmm. That's where you're going to get the benefit. And how do you think about the customer journey that way? Versus just like the spray and pray of, let me just add a ton of products in my catalog.
Yes. Yes. I guess, the focus is just the other way around, right? And great. Jessica, so how do you see 2024? What is your outlook for the year?
So I'm looking a lot, like I mentioned, at this data. I think there are a couple of things that for sure concern me. The first is we have over a trillion, it's 1.3 trillion now in consumer credit card debt that I think is going to be difficult for consumers to dig out of. We have inflation that doesn't feel like it's coming down fast enough. And I don't know, you know, within the US that people are, the Fed is going to make the rate cuts at the timelines that people think. We'll see. You have also like to your point, you have this very crowded marketplace and lots of people vying for probably smaller spend dollars. And so I think that we're going into 2024 cautiously optimistic, but I do believe it's going to be
2024. You mean?
Yeah, 2024. Yeah, going into 2024, like more cautiously optimistic because it's because of those things. Mm-hmm. I'll say on the flip side, it's an election year, and never rule out what can happen in an election year in the U.S. I've seen, you know, crazier things. So I think that those dynamics will be interesting. And then just more tactically, you've got a shorter holiday shopping season, right? Which you're going to lose a couple of days. Those are big selling days. And so people have to be smarter about how you connect with consumers, especially as like they just are shopping later and later. So there's some interesting dynamics. I'll say, like I said, we're cautiously optimistic and preparing for lots of different scenarios.
Wow, Jessica, really, really interesting. Thank you so much. I mean, you are, again, after 20 years, I can feel the passion and the energy for the industry, which is really, really amazing. And I mean, well done. And thank you so much for all your expertise and knowledge, and definitely for sharing it here with us. And on a personal note, please share with us something that most of your professional network is not aware of you, something for your personal life that you're happy to share.
Yeah. So, gosh, there's lots of different things. I mean, hobby-wise, I love running. Family-wise, I have two boys that keep us busy. But probably like an interesting tidbit, I would really love to be able to rap professionally. Like it's like,
wow.
And I've taken a long time to learn like a couple of songs. And
really?
So I'll bring them out when we go to the karaoke bars. But yeah, so that's probably more of a fun fact.
Nice.
My go-to is Lose Yourself by Eminem. So
really? You want to share with us some bits?
It's 7:30 in the morning for me.
Okay.
Usually I have a beer, not coffee, before I get kick-started on
No problem. We'll schedule the next one in the evening.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, right. You got to get a beat for me.
No problem. We'll fix that. Great, Jessica. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you. It's nice to talk to you. Appreciate the opportunity and love what you're doing with your show as well. So thank you.
And so where is the best place for people to find you?
So best place, for sure, LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And I'm on LinkedIn a lot. We talk about the show a lot. We do it on LinkedIn Live every Friday at 12 Eastern. Hopefully we'll see you there.
Yes, for sure. And put the details also in the episode show notes for the listeners to get more information. And really appreciate your time, Jessica. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too. Thank you for joining us on this episode. Your support means the world to us. If today's episode has been insightful for you, consider sharing it with someone who would also benefit. Even one share can make a big difference. Looking to elevate your e-commerce game? Discover Vimi, a multi-channel e-commerce platform that will transform your business with the power of shoppable video. Visit us at vimi.net to learn more. It's Vimi, V-I-M-M-I.net. Thank you for being part of our journey. Stay tuned for more invaluable insights in our next episode.